This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
I first met Kyle in 2003 when we were both recent college undergrad graduates. We both were working at the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh as artist educators. And it was kind of this unique opportunity as a very young artist, I think I was 20, 21, 22 when I started working there, to kind of be given the authority to tell museum visitors that I'm an artist educator, to be able to self-identify as an artist. Be asked to kind of do programming for teens, for the general public, and to be able to, or to be asked specifically to talk about Warhol's work through the lens of my own artistic practice was just kind of an extraordinary opportunity. So that's, I met Kyle through this, and I think it's maybe rare, I don't know, these days. I just feel like I met Kyle first as a person, and I think just to know Kyle is to love him, and I he's just the most genuine, hardworking, thoughtful, sweet person ever. So I think like the fact that I've gotten to be friends with him, I like snuck in there a long time ago. But then I remember, I have to say, I first saw him perform, I think it was in 2003 or 2004 in East Liberty in Pittsburgh. Yeah, at the Kelly Strayhorn Theater, I saw him perform a solo dance called Pookie Jenkins. Right. It was the Pookie Jenkins dance. So, okay, maybe it's 2005. He walked on stage, shirtless, with a floor-length gauzy tutu with a boombox on his shoulder.
Shirtless doesn't happen anymore.
Shirtless doesn't happen. It should. And just completely blew my mind. You can find the clip on YouTube. It's outrageous. And I think maybe it seems obvious to everyone else who is well-versed in dance. I just had no idea that a gesture could allude to a person's psychology or like the history of making or just like the ripe cultural moment. I mean, I think I was just totally blown away. I burst into tears, cried the entire performance, and then immediately afterwards went to the box office and got a ticket for the next day's performance. So I was hooked. So we met when we were kids at the Warhol Museum, and I think we were both asked to look closely at Warhol's work and to kind of try to connect the museum audience with Warhol's work through our own work and thinking. And so Warhol's screen tests have been very influential to me. I think we both often think about slowness, slow time, about portraiture. I think repetition is something.
So actually, when you look at Elvis 11 Times, it was actually the work that I presented for my interview for the job, actually. And as an artist educator with a dance background, people were like, why do you have a dance person? And it was really exciting for me to kind of talk about the reasoning. Can you see a brother? Okay, the reasoning behind my association with Warhol and his work. So I thought maybe what I would do is maybe get a couple of volunteers, and I'll show you what we do when I would take people on tours and show people Elvis 11 Times. So maybe like three people, perhaps. Three people that just want to stand and come on up. Yes, come on up. Maybe two more people. Yes. Well. I'm not just pulling from the front row. I can pull from the back or the middle. Maybe one more person, perhaps. Yeah, come on up. It's really chill, I promise. I promise. It's just a good excuse to stretch your legs for a second, too. Yeah, no problem.
Yay.
Yay, thank you all. So you all see this image, right? So what I'm just going to ask of you, really chill, really simply, all at the same time, we'll face out forward. I want you to just repeat the gesture 11 times. I'll count it out if we lose track. Ready? Shall we try? And we go. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Great, thanks. Thank you so much. So the interesting thing for me with this exercise is every time people do it, they very rarely do it exactly the same way each time. And you know, when we're thinking about Warhol, we're thinking about silkscreen, the man could have very easily made this image look exactly the same every time, but there's something about the humanity in it that made it so that it wasn't. And so for me, it really kind of connected the work with humanity to a certain extent. He could have very easily made the image look exactly the same, but instead it adds a level of complexity as we're thinking about humor at times, or emotions, or how we're connecting to movement. So that's why I presented this work on the tour. I think after this, though, the next time that Carrie and I came together was when Carrie, she hit me up. She was telling me she was working on a project about falling in 2008. And I was working on a project about falling at the same time. So it was really serendipitous that we connected in this way.
I wanted advice on how to fall and not hurt myself. And he told me, he gave me some tips, and then I just didn't follow his advice at all, and I ended up really hurting myself having to perform this. But it was great to know that we were both thinking about falling.
Yeah, the work, The Dripping Kind, premiered in 2000. It was similar themes. I think for me it was looking at falling and relationship to love, but not falling in love, just falling and love.
Same. Yeah. Then the very next year, I did like a solo show, project show in Trondheim, Norway, as part of a residency where I invited four artist friends to make collaborative works with me. So this is moving. It's very, very slow. It's a 10-minute film called Untitled Balthus Pose, and Kyle performed in this very minute detail, this very famous pose from a Balthus painting. So I was kind of interested in reversing the gender roles and the gaze of the viewer.
I think that kind of connects a lot with the project that then followed in 2010, which was Opus One. And Opus One was a work that was inspired by Edwin Muybridge, looking at the human figure studies. And when Carrie and I connected, it was really exciting for me. She was doing a residency of her own, and she would send me different video stills of ways in which she was connecting with the subject matter. And I would then take that to my dancers, and we'd find different ways to connect. And the human figure studies are a major component to the way that I make work. I think a lot of times when people think about dance, they think about gesture or ways of movement. Conversation comes up about pedestrian, which I think can be very cliche in dance, because if I say something, I'm just gonna stand up so you can see in the back. If I say something like, oh, touch this wall, and I say that, do it like in a pedestrian way, dancers sometimes will go, I'm like, that's not how people touch a wall, you touch a wall. So I say to my dancers, touch it like a construction worker, right? Because a construction worker is not going to be doing all that. They're just going to touch the wall. And so for us, a lot of the way that the photographs, those Muybridge images were shown in some of the books, were a way for the dancers to find access to just returning to just the humanity and the kind of construction worker concept of just being a real person doing real things.
What an incredible opportunity for someone who works in lens-based media, or to, as a photographer, to be talking to a choreographer who's looking at photographs as a starting point. So that was fascinating for me, and I was also really interested in ideas of the grid. That's something that's kind of continues to come up in my work, and so I think I was testing these different things against this gridded backdrop, including finding this black snake in the woods in this residency I was doing in rural Ohio, and then it was projected on a scrim in front of the dancers for this piece.
Yeah, this is a work that premiered at Jacob's Pillow in 2010, and I didn't even think about it until you just showed it right now, but this was actually, you actually performing in this dance, because when the audience came into the theater, Carrie's actually laying out the floor pattern in the work. Right before we get to actually Live the Realist MC, I think it's important to also mention that it was really integral to have Carrie with us when we were making Opus 1. We had her in the theater with us, kind of creating the film element and really collaborating in a different capacity, talking about what worked and what didn't work. But then we get to Live the Realist MC, which was in 2011. And Live the Realist MC for me is kind of the story of Pinocchio, but seen in a kind of like urban queerified lens, thinking that if you put on this hip-hop bravado, you'll be viewed as more of a man. And for me at times in school, it was to kind of go unnoticed. Carrie and I collaborated on this work. It's a work that first premiered at the Kelly Strayhorn in 2011, but then went on to New York season at The Kitchen that same year. And we had several residencies for it as well, some of which were at On the Boards in Seattle. And every one of those residencies, Carrie was with us, finding moments to integrate film and video throughout. This image was really important to me while we were creating Live the Realist MC. When I was telling Carrie about the themes I was interested in making in the work, she started sending me different images of stills from the film that she was, the film footage she was shooting. And when she sent this to me, I got this idea to write this text that was kind of like a loosely 90s based rap kind of thing that would kind of play. If you're fans of like Das FX or groups like that from that time, it was kind of an homage to that, but thinking about this, the time that I was in high school with this kind of queerified lens. So I thought maybe what I would do is do some of that text for you.
A little bit. This is a young man who lives on the south side of Chicago, nicknamed Fast Eddie. I had been making these screen tests with him. And kind of imagining him as being a young Kyle, a younger version of Kyle.
How y'all feeling? Woo! Y'all, I'm saying to ask y'all a question. How y'all feeling? Yeah, that's what's up. That's what's up. Hey, Philly, where you at? No doubt. I see you, Ben. How you feeling, money? Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I see you, Kaja. How you doing, baby? Yeah, I see you, Carrie. How you doing, Ma? You good? Yeah, I see you, Ma. Mom, mommy, he hit me, mommy, he hit me. He hit me, I didn't do anything, and he hit me. I didn't do anything, and he hit me. I was just standing there, and he kicked me. Can we kick it? Y'all, I'm saying, buddy, can we kick it? Yo, give me somewhere level my monitors right quick, you know what I'm saying? I'ma spit a quick 16 for you off the dome right quick. Yeah, I'ma spit, he spit on me, he held me down, he spit on me. He hit me, he didn't do anything. And they spit on us. They held me down.
They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me down. They held me
down. They held me down. They held me down trying to get the best of me. Face down to the ground like they was arresting me. Fighting in the struggle of who I want to be. Escape to the rock trying to get the blind to see that you can't be. I'm not going to go to the best gate in the sea. So I'm going to keep it street where you watch me. Shine and stay on my grind. Motherfuckers can't. I messed up. I messed up. Skip that part. Skip that part. Take it from the top. Take it from the top. Make it deep. Skip that part. Skip. Make it deeper. They held me down. 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 Trying to get the best of me. Face down to the ground like they was arresting me. Fighting in the struggle for who I want to be. Escape to the rock, trying to get the blood to see that you can't beat. I thought they put the best game to see. So I'ma keep it straight while you watch me. Shot and stay on my grind. Motherfuckers in your head, cause I put in my time. Again, nigga can't wear, but he never did no crime. So just watch me. Shot and stay on my grind.
Thank you, Kyle. Pavement is the next work of Kyle's that I was able to photograph, just some promotional photographs for the company. And so we did it on site in Brooklyn at a basketball court. Everyone showed up really early on a Sunday morning in costume. There's a lot that Kyle, I'm sure, could say about this work. This work is has been touring repeatedly.
So Pavement is a work that premiered, premiered in 2012 at Harlem Stage in New York. And Pavement for me is a work that's looking at both the writings of W.E.B. Du Bois, Souls of Black Folk, and John Singleton's Boys in the Hood, putting them together, but thinking about my life in Pittsburgh and thinking about these historically black neighborhoods who in the early 90s were kind of rival gangs, and just trying to think about not only that, but the history that was connected with the communities in Pittsburgh, both in the Hill District and Homewood. We're doing it at Sadler's Wells in London in next month, but we've tried to stop touring it for a while if we could, just based on our current company setup.
Well, I'm just going to go through a couple of slides here briefly, and we'll touch on this more with Kaja. And then in 2013 and 2014, right as Kyle was being announced as the 2013 class, the MacArthur Genius Fellows, he and I released the first of seven of these short videos. Each one of them, I filmed Kyle dancing to a different song, and so each piece is the length of the song, so three to 5 minutes, 3 to 7 minutes, and we mostly focused on James Blake's album, Overgrown, and then so each one is named after a different song. This was kind of a really beautiful opportunity. It was at this moment when Kyle was being also, had just, it was announced that he was this fellow at the New York Live Arts. And with that fellowship, he was not able to perform in New York for something like 2 years. So it kind of gave him an opportunity to be like, well, this isn't a performance, except, you know, just for the camera. And it, for me, it was this really amazing, unique opportunity to get to see Kyle dance solo. He has this company now of nine dancers, and they're extraordinary. But often, you know, even now, sometimes he's not even in the work because he's choreographing it. So it's kind of this beautiful opportunity for him also to improvise. He had made a point to not listen to these songs too many times, and then some of them he collaborated with a couple of his other friends who are dancers. This is Blood on the Leaves. We also, he performed to one song that Kaja had alluded to before, Kanye West's Blood on the Leaves. This is I Am Sold, Still Our Love Comes Back, performed with Rena Butler.
Mm-hmm. This is a group work. There's actually three other men in this video.
And then just quickly, I'm going to go through a couple other of the recent promotional photos that I've made for Kyle's recent works. This is from When the Wolves Came in the Watershed, and this is a kind of a dual, they're different dances, but it's for a feature length program.
So part of the residency at New York Live Arts, I tried to do two completely new full evening length work programs. So When the Wolves Came In was its own program, and then The Watershed, they both premiered the same week. They're both ensemble works, evening length works.
And then this most recent year, the piece that performed premiered in May in San Francisco, mm-hmm. That was performed at the Kitchen this summer, called Dearest Home. Here's a bunch of the promotional photographs. That brings us to this moment, and we thought we would talk with Kaja a little bit, or show one of the Dance Response Project videos. That is, they're all five of the seven are being screened on loop in this room throughout the run of the show.
So that was something I wanted to ask you about. So maybe I could just. Why that album? What was it about that album? I mean, it's a great album, but
his first album I was listening to a lot when I was creating a work in Ireland. And I just felt very isolated and had a lot of time to think internally. So when I started thinking about his second album that came out, I was heavily inspired by a lot of the lyrical content, especially in Overgrown. And I think there was just something so poetic that was in those lyrics that I thought could best be addressed in film as opposed to in live performance. I have tried to do one or two of them in live performance, but it's a different experience. And there's so much that Carrie can capture with just focusing on different body parts and catching focuses that you may not be able to see from an audience.
I think the lone male voice, the kind of like that, the quality of voice in all of these songs, I think is really striking to me in the way that it kind of plays off of the mostly solo figure, male figure. I think that there's something about that really resonates in an interesting way.
Could we maybe try thinking about the More Than Private in terms of that project? She's had more time to think about it. So the title of the show is More Than Private. So they are very private. I think I asked you, I thought of the Tina Turner album Private Dancer at one point, but obviously this is a very different context. It seems a very intimate scale, a very different kind of dancing, but it's destined for a larger audience, and I'm just wondering if either of you has any thoughts about that.
I think it may be one of the first ones we'll watch, Overgrown. When we started working on that, I thought of that more as a kind of like a journal entry, something much more insular, much more private, where some of the videos to me are much more performative. It's still a video that I watch sometimes. I don't usually watch myself on video, but there's something that really speaks to me with the way in which we collaborated in that capacity on something that was to appear very private and very intimate.
Yeah, it feels as if it carries the intimacy into the public sphere in a very special way. The work, the one video that you do with a troop of people, with a collective work, it feels so different from those others. And so I know you're directing and not filming, is that right?
I'm directing, but I also am working with a DP on those ones. So I'm moving someone who's holding the camera so I can watch.
Right.
Yeah.
So that is, maybe we'll look at one of them talk about this fascinating combination of music, dance, and video, and how that's working together. Mm-hmm. So I have a very specific question for each of you. I don't want to be a star. Clearly, that's a very resonant line for you, so that would be really fascinating to hear about. You said the lyrics were an important part of it. And then the framing, that's the decisive intervention. And in both in this and Digital Lion, it's very closely framed, and that makes it a very different creature. So maybe you can...
Sure. I mean, I think the close framing was an attempt to see these details, the hands. I mean, I think to know Kyle's work is that it works... It functions on these global levels, but also these extreme local levels, these kind of tiny gestures of things that speak volumes. And I think that as a member of the audience, you can only get so close. And so it was kind of an attempt to bring some of those things closer.
I think the proximity is operating on many different levels. I mean, that is very close. And also the framing, which I love so much in Digital Lion. I mean, just stunning. Yeah, so that's really interesting. So Kyle, you are a star, so do you not want?
One of the things that was happening was, as you mentioned, the MacArthur was 2013, and these were coming in around that time. There was a lot of pressure and focus on me and a lot of restrictions. So as many wonderful opportunities that were arising, there was an equal amount of restrictions being placed on what I could do on my own. I wasn't allowed to show work in New York for a period of time, which in a lot of ways is like you're not allowed to be expressive. And there's something about this video that reminds me of why I started dancing and what my passion was for movement before I started taking a dance class. I would go in my room, I would put on Morrissey or Prince or something, and I would just dance. And it wasn't about anyone watching me or anyone's approval. And it's the same way I feel when I go to the club. I actually go in a corner when I'm at the club and I dance all night long, but I don't want to be seen. I just want to just have that otherworldly experience that dance can give you. And even with all the great opportunities to perform on stages, the presentational aspect of it is not something that I'm drawn to. It's more the opportunity to have all of these other components to come together to create whatever that experience is. So it's having a film, it's having lighting, it's having music, it's having collaborators that I can collaborate with live in space. All of that is part of the experience that I enjoy more so than having an audience of however many, although it's very flattering when there's 2,000 people applauding for whatever you do. It's great.
Yeah, that's. I think I sensed in the dancing already that was the backstory behind I Don't Want to Be a Star. It's very resonant. More thoughts about the relationship between, so I guess one further thought that came up as Kyle was speaking is the dancing alone in your room connected to the dancing with Carrie? What are her eyes, in a certain sense, for you?
Carrie is one of the greatest collaborators. She's wonderful with her sharing what she's seeing in a way that is very honest and truthful. She wants whatever the experience is to be its best, which is so outstanding, and it makes me trust her all the more. So there are a lot of times when we would work together where I would say, you know, what I'm doing is a part of this collaboration, but I trust you wholeheartedly with the editing. That's a whole other component to it, and I'd love to see that. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's maybe dependent on different projects, and I think the ways in which we would kind of make these things happen, I'd maybe say, I'm really interested in just looking at the torsos in this section. So how she frames that, or how she says, okay, well, I think we should film this in my studio with a fully white space around us. Let's do it in black and white. Let's do it in color. All of those things add to me what a really key collaboration is. It's really connecting and conversing amongst each other and seeing how one thing can influence the other and make something that much stronger.
So the editing room, is that the decisive one, or do you feel... So let's talk about that moment.
It's complicated. I think it's very apparent in the video that we will probably show next, the Blood on the Leaves video, where Kyle actually performed the piece four times. I think we had four different cuts, and I just couldn't decide. They were all so beautiful, so I just overlaid them all on top of each other because I just wanted to indulge seeing all of them. But I think it is, it's something I forget about, because for me, like, once I get the footage, it's mine, and then the footage kind of demands certain things, and then I've watched these videos so many hundreds of times, just like every second, to see, you know, where the cut is where, and I forget that there is an awful lot of trust there for Kyle to be like, all right, don't fail me, you know, because it's his work, but then it's, you know,
it's our work.
Yeah.
You know, I think if I was telling you when and where to edit, to me that's not real collaboration, but I actually love giving that freedom over. I want to see what you can create with, you know, especially Blood on the Leaves. Each take was very different from the next, purposefully, so that there's that much more material to be playing with.
I was telling Carrie that in this class that I was describing earlier, where I did Blood on the Leaves, we actually looked at the lyrics to the Kanye West. He's an unreliable narrator, as they say in, you know, English classes, and he is very chameleon-like. You know, I mean, he is a very unstable personality you're dealing with, which makes the overlapping, the layering, so wonderful.
I mean, I think one more thing about my eye. I mean, I just feel like I'm just such a loving viewer. You know, like I've sat in on many rehearsals, and I will get lost in it. I mean, there was a time when we were shooting the Dearest Home footage, with the white backdrops, where Connie, one of the dancers, was dancing, and I was just crying. I forgot that I was filming, but I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe I get to be here and watch this, like, before anyone else sees this. And it feels like such an incredible gift to get to be there. But I think I'm like, first I'm in love, and then I like later get to go back and like look at what was shot. And I think Kyle has such incredible instincts about sound and about light, about color, edits. Like, you're just like, you could really do all this yourself. And so I just feel like it's like this really beautiful thing to kind of get to like have these conversations together. Like, I think it's been a real joy.
So Pavement, and the earlier works that I've seen clips of, the dance troupe was almost entirely consisted of men. And Kyle told me today that it is reversed, that he has 2-3 men?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the rest women. And I thought that's wonderful. And can we maybe talk about that?
Sure. Most of the works in the company were originated with four women and maybe 2 or 3 men, just by happenstance. But when we started working on Pavement, I was really interested in creating a work that had more of a male presence. And there was just honestly a lot of changeover that was happening in the company at that time. So it was a great time to try that experiment. But the tricky thing is with Pavement's success, it meant when we're touring these other works, like work like The Radio Show, which we did across the street at the Annenberg, or Live the Real SMC, which you just saw a clip of, those works had four women and two men. It was harder to keep that alive. So we try not to tour Pavement as much because I don't want the full company to be unemployed because they are salaried all year long. So that was really important. At this point, some of the gender in certain roles can totally shift and change. I am generally probably more drawn to working with women. It's probably just I have more female friends than I have male friends. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe that has to do with trust, right? It's like, who are you around most? Who do you trust most? And I just generally collaborate with people I have a fair amount of trust with. So usually anyone that's coming into the space with us, we spend a good amount of time together, regardless of their gender, how they're identifying, but depending on the repertory sometimes.
When in your interviews about Dearest Home, you very candidly identified the losses behind it, and it is a work that is drenched in loss. Your mother's death, the loss of the end of a very important breakup, and the death of Prince. It's the last one I thought we might talk about for a moment. That actually, I thought last year was just a devastating year for the Leonard Cohen, Bowie, Prince, but the Prince was the saddest because it was so totally unexpected, and he was still very young. But your relationship to certain musicians is very intense and rich, and I just thought maybe we could hear about the Prince part.
The first dances I ever made was to Prince. The first time I ever showed my mother and father a dance, it was to Prince. It was to audition for performing arts school. I showed them the dance, and yeah, the first solo I ever made. So that had its own kind of resonance for me, other than the fact that I've loved his music since I was a child. First 45 I owned was I Would Die For You.
Purple Rain.
Yeah, that album, but yeah, the Purple Rain birthday party. It was a hard year. I know so many people have had a hard year, but I think maybe in some ways it was part of the bitter irony of creating a dance that is intentionally viewed in silence when you think about the loss of the musician who had the biggest impact on my life and on the way that I dream or at times felt accepted or felt excluded. Yeah, I've always just been a huge advocate of and fan of his music. But my mother passed about a month and a half after Prince, and neither situation was something that I foresaw, nor the relationship ending. But yeah, all those things were huge, huge sources of probably just tangibility with in relation to how I worked with my collaborators. It's a serendipitous thing because I think so often, and a kind of eerie thing, so often the work that I create or Carrie collaborates with me on, the subject matter is something that has maybe been brewing 2 years before the actual work is seen. So a work like The Radio Show from 2010 was a work that was looking at my father's aphasia and Alzheimer's, but drawing connection to radio. Ironically, the only urban radio station that we had in Pittsburgh was taken off the air several months before this show called The Radio Show premieres in Pittsburgh. Live the Real SMC, a show really looking at identity and my experience growing up and trying to hide who I was. It's a show that premiered in 2011, but around the making time in 2009, 2010, you're hearing stories of Tyler Clemente taking his life and what that experience is and all the kind of attention drawn into that and how we're thinking about bullying in relationship to identity and ownership. Pavement, 2012. The dance was conceived in 2010. The work is made. And then a month later, Trayvon Martin. And people think it's a work about Trayvon Martin. It's about all of the Trayvon Martins because it's a work that was conceived prior to. That's something that just keeps happening in the work. So with Dearest Home being conceived in 2015 and finding its premiere in 2017, it's just a tricky thing when you're making a work initially about love, longing, and loss to have lost all these important figures in my life.
I have two last questions, and then we're going to turn to a Q&A. So is it Nina Simone or Billie Holiday? It's Nina Simone. Okay, that's what I thought. So that is so fascinating because it introduces the woman. It brings a woman into his private reveries, which are, of course, there's tremendous misogyny. So I'm just curious about that, particularly because you then are doing a different kind of duet. I mean, he's sampling her. That might be a resonant word, gender-wise. It's not straightforward, but it's about ownership and a baby and the body. I guess I'm answering my own question, huh? I'm not going to say the N-word myself, but I find that moment so unbelievably touching when he says, I'm down with my, there's something about the intensity of the emotion and the my word. And I'm just wondering, Kyle, if you have any thoughts about that.
I think throughout I was thinking with this project in particular about playing with these harder or softer movements and thinking about the ways in which we can flow from one to the next, and thinking about, in some ways, the ways in which people use that term. It's not a term I never use it, unless I'm doing Pavement, which is looking at black on black crime. And in my mind, the only reason why you would use a word that was rooted in hatred when referring to someone that looks like you is because you have issues with yourself. But that's a larger conversation for another day. But in this context, I think it was just kind of exploring those two things, that hard and soft, and playing with the transition between the two.
The most weirdly compelling, there's some thing he's not saying. There's something that he's communicating through that language and the repetition. I'm down with my down. Anyway, you know, that's just such a beautiful work. And I love the way you exit. And I have to say that I've seen what you performed tonight in several other versions, and I thought this was just the best ever, and I know everyone in the room did too. Kyle, thank you so much. It was so glorious.